Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, we're live in Austin, Texas at the Texas Association of Broadcasters. And on today's show, we've got guest appearances from Jeff Welton, Paul Kriegler, Steve Newberry, Benjamin Dawson, and more coming up next on TWRT.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio, Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio. Audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. By Nautel, worry-free transmission you can count on with outstanding control, reliability, efficiencies, and Nautel's unmatched 24/7 customer support, online at Nautel.com. And by MaxConnect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts.
Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to the light bulb at the top of the tower. I'm Kirk Harnack. We are live today in Austin, Texas, at the Texas Association of Broadcasters. We're at the big JW Marriott Hotel in downtown Austin. It's been years since I've been here, and so we're not at the Telos Alliance studio, although I want to thank Telos Alliance. Oh, look, got some signage right here. Oh, and right here, too, for letting me have the afternoon off to do this show, bringing you engineers and movers and shakers in the broadcast industry, and this time from Austin, Texas. Let's see. I want to introduce real quickly. My colleague is Paul Kriegler. Hi, Paul. Good to see you.
Good. Good to see you, Kirk. Welcome to Austin, Texas. Hook 'em horns.
And you, last time you were here at this convention was when?
2019. I skipped last year. I was sick last year. I couldn't make it.
Well, so they did have one in 2021.
Yeah, they sure did. And it was hugely successful. I think it was one of the biggest state shows in all of the United States here in Texas last year. Full attendance.
Yeah. Well, these Texans didn't want to stay home anymore.
We're serious about getting together in Austin every year.
We're going to circle back with you in a few minutes and talk about audio processing. I want to talk about audio processing for streaming especially, or for your HD channels, if you've got some wisdom to pass along.
I do.
Good deal. You can tell us what's coming up new in that business.
We've got something up our sleeve.
Well, okay.
We can tease.
You're wearing short sleeves.
That's the tease. Come back later.
All right. All right, and with me also is a gentleman who is familiar to our viewers, Ben Dawson. Hello, Ben.
Well, good afternoon.
It's great to see you.
Nice to see you. It's nice always to be down here in Austin, which is one of my favorite places in Texas, and like many places in Texas, has good barbecue.
Now, for the six people in our audience who don't know Ben Dawson, you do consulting engineering.
I'm an electrical engineer, and I and my firm are specialists in applied electromagnetic physics. Now, what that means is antennas and propagation and similar matters for broadcasting and public safety and transportation and the government and the military and sometimes other governments. But if it has to do with getting information from point to point or using RF for some kind of purpose and not communications, we occasionally or sometimes frequently do it.
Your firm, Hatfield Dawson, right?
Right.
Is certainly familiar to broadcasters, but you're telling me that you do plenty of work outside the broadcast industry.
Yes, that's always been true.
Wow. Okay. What's got your attention these days?
Well, because I'm an old guy, all of a sudden there's an explosion. Well, maybe not an explosion, but there's certainly an increase in the amount of activity going on with AM broadcasting stations. Primarily because of the fact that their transmitter sites occupy, in some cases, very valuable real estate, and in many cases, because their transmitter sites are much more complicated than seems appropriate for the service they're providing or for the financial reward that they can provide to their owners.
Yeah.
And so as a consequence, we see an awful lot of activity involving AM transmitter sites. So what I'm here tomorrow, actually, is to talk about all of the considerations that people need to take into account for when they're dealing with an AM transmitter site. We've seen a lot of sites sold off to real estate operators, the American Towers and Vertical Bridges and Crown Castles and so forth, and some smaller ones as well. And they all need to take advantage of the real estate possibilities or they wouldn't have bought them. And those need to be, in some cases, made compatible with existing operation of the radio stations. And the existing operation of the radio stations may in some cases be very valuable and a significant player in the market. But on the other case, there may be many of them that whose only real value is supporting an FM translator.
Yeah.
And so as a consequence, they can be considerably downsized. Plus which we now have the analytical tools to look at things like antennas and ground systems in much more complete and mathematically precise, or at least mathematically a careful way than we were able to do, you know, when I started out in this business over 60 years ago.
So can you think of an example or two of a really interesting and maybe surprising changes to an AM station other than taking it off the air? And I know what you mean about stations simplifying and keeping their translator, because one of my stations has done that, went from three towers to one, but we get plenty of use out of the FM translator.
Oh yeah, that's a very, very characteristic thing to do. What's kind of disturbing about that is that it has led to an awful lot of increased congestion in the FM band, and that's a problem for some people. FM translators for AM stations actually came about in the lower 48, of course, just in the past few years, but we had them in Alaska, you know, for many, many years, and people didn't know that. Even the commission people sometimes didn't know that.
Okay.
And it's, you know, it can be a very, very useful thing. There have been experiments. There's a fellow in Puerto Rico who's done some very nice work on same channel AM repeaters, so-called synchronized repeaters. There were some early examples of that, you know, in various places in the United States. There's the WBZ-WBZA example in Boston and Springfield. There were stations in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area like that. And then, of course, back in the 30s, before we had directional antennas in great profusion, we had some examples then of stations that were operating sort of semi-synchronously. Unfortunately, with analog AM, that kind of synchronization isn't nearly as effective as it is with either FM or with digital transmission, where it can be extremely effective because of the characteristics of the receiver behavior.
I recall now, it was many years ago, I was in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and there was a semi-synchronous, you know, AM there.
It's still in operation. It's one of the very few, maybe the last one left in the lower 48 here. I don't think there's one in Alaska. And the one in Puerto Rico was on special temporary authority, and the commission finally refused to renew the special temporary authority. There were examples in Hawaii that are no longer in operation. I think the one, think of the call letters on 770 in Albuquerque, and I can't think of the call letters, but its little repeater operates at nighttime when the station's operating in directional in order to protect New York.
Yeah. Okay. Isn't KKOB? Is it?
Yes. It's KOB and it's nighttime repeater twin.
Yeah.
There was one in Charlotte, North Carolina, I think. One of the Carolinas, there was one for many years too that was very similar.
So I know that often you deal with the FCC. Usually you're helping stations to follow the rules or get things done that are held, that are within the confines of the FCC's rules. Is there anything on your wish list that you wish the FCC would act on or change here?
I wish they'd get off their duff and do something about all of the propagation and, I'm sorry, the allocation changes that were proposed in the and the AM rulemaking, which have never come about. The only thing they did was adopt the FM translators. And some of those rules need badly to be changed because they're based on what was going on in the 1930s. And the noise level in America has risen at least 20 dB since then. And some relatively recent changes, like the 6 dB change in the first adjacent channel rule, has been very, very damaging to stations. Even stations trying to make significant improvements, not just downsize or consolidate transmitter sites.
I don't know that I'm at liberty to tell the whole story, so I'll just keep to the short version. Recently, my business partner in our radio stations, he got the FCC to write off part of a regulatory fee that hadn't been paid, that was holding up a CP or a move. The FCC wrote off 30 cents that hadn't been paid.
It was redline, yes.
Yes.
That's not an uncommon problem for smaller stations.
Yeah.
And there are a few other things the commission could do. For example, the commission had some contractor prepare the software to do pre-sunrise analysis, and that software turned out to be defective. And so the commission hasn't issued any new pre-sunrise authorizations or post-sunset authorization now for, I think, a couple of decades now. And it's been very damaging to stations that needed to move their AM transmitter site. They can't retain their pre-sunrise authority. And that can be very damaging. Up our way in the Pacific Northwest, where we're far, far north, Portland's north of Minneapolis.
Yeah.
Our sunrise and sunset times in the wintertime, you know, sunrise is at 8 o'clock and sunsets at 4:15 in some places.
Yeah.
And that means no drive time. Unless you've got pre-sunrise and post-sunset authority and you're otherwise a daytimer.
Ben, thanks for sharing your thoughts with us. I appreciate it very much.
Well, you're always welcome to my opinions, whether they're any good or not.
Well, I, at some point, love to have you back on for the whole hour show. Ben, thank you so much. Ben Dawson with Hatfield & Dawson, consulting engineers out of Seattle, Washington. It's thank you. Thanks again. It's This Week in Radio Tech. We're coming to you live from the JW Marriott Hotel and Convention Center in Austin, Texas. And this is about the time when usually I do a commercial announcement for our friends at Nautel, but better than that, ladies and gentlemen, in person, come on in here, Jeff Welton. Jeff Welton from Nautel. It's good to see you.
It's good to be seen. As my father used to say, it's better to be seen than to be viewed. But
to make good on our commercial, let's step forward.
Let's a little bit closer.
Let's go ahead and have Suncast show us whatever web page that I gave you, Suncast, to show us. I think it was the trans. Oh yeah, the VX series.
Yeah.
Give us the 60-second, because that's all you're paying for, commercial on the VX.
It's just one of those. The best way to put it, I was on the design team, so we started doing this a lot of years ago, and we sat down and they said, what do you want in a transmitter? What do your customers want? And I said, I want a crown. And they said, what? And I said, I want something that I can plug in, stick in a grain silo, turn it on, walk away, 5 years later, come back, and it's still running under that pile of dirt. You know, we've all seen the pictures. So that was the kind of thing I was shooting for. And so this has gone to the point that if you look at the long, boring, sales-oriented presentation we do on it, we show that the video of heat mapping, like we map the airflow through it to the point that we can tell you exactly where the heat's going, and everything's designed so each component gets the amount of heat that we wanted, as one example. So it's just, the goal was to build something that was a little less expensive and more reliable. And I mean, the VS series, we get 8,000 of those out there, and they've been one of our more reliable boxes, but we're just trying to improve on it.
Yeah.
So little things like having power supplies that you can get to without tearing the lid apart, you know, everything being top accessible. So stuff like that.
You are taking a little break from Transmission Talk Tuesday for August.
August.
Do you plan to bring it back?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Now, I am on the road the entire month of August. So it's just I could do this stuff on the road, but I'm not as debonair and as erudite and as well experienced as you are.
You just need more suitcases like I have.
Yeah, no, see, that's my problem. I'm getting fat and lazy, and I don't need more suitcases.
So if you want information on the Nautel VX series, the latest transmitter, what should people do?
Nautel.com, okay. And just hit up the VX series or info@nautel.com, and that'll go to my boss, who at some point will read the email and send it to whichever sales guy is appropriate.
I may have this wrong. You build the whole VX series of FM transmitter with no solder. Oh, no, wait a minute. That's not it. I don't have to solder anything to change the PA card.
The PA card is solderless. It's totally, and it's not clamp FETs. The FETs are soldered into the pallet.
Yeah.
But the pallet itself is totally screwed on with pressure connections. Yes. So it's one of those things that, again, a serviceability improvement.
Now, I brought you out for the commercial.
Yeah.
Could we cycle you back out and bring you back in a minute to talk about what's going on? So give us a little tease of what you're talking about tomorrow.
Tomorrow is my favorite. It's lightning protection. Stuff that goes boom and how not to make it go boom.
All right.
So we'll
get more of that in just a minute.
I'll be right back.
Thanks a lot. Hey, Steve Newberry is here, ladies and gentlemen. Steve, good to see you, man.
See you, Kurt.
Matt, how long have I been knowing you?
About 40 years.
Oh, my goodness.
40 years. Actually, 39 years to be exact, I guess, 40 years ago.
Oh my gosh. Whatever happened to the guy that got us together?
I assume he may be a resident of the state. So, you know, but that's been a long time ago.
So, yeah, we worked together a little bit at WoVo.
Right? That's exactly right. Yeah. That's exactly right. Yeah. Back in 1983 was the first year that our paths crossed with each other.
You know, it's getting not too long. It'll be 50 years since 1983.
Well, it'll be 39 years. Yeah, 49.
Okay, another decade. It'll be okay. I misread.
Call on him for your technical needs, not your math equations.
So, what are you doing now? You involved with this wallet you tell?
So still at my stations in Kentucky, so I'm still a broadcaster. But okay. Q is the company that I'm the CEO of, and you were kind enough to have Joe Marshall from our team as a guest of yours a few months back. Simply put, we're trying to make it very easy for broadcasters to control and dynamically control what's on their dashboards. So, simply put, you can take the output of an automation system and whatever's playing on the air. We've been doing that for years. You can take the output of that and put it on your RDS.
Sure.
What we enable you to do is really manage that, separate from what your automation system says versus what you want to do. For instance, if on your automation system it says McDonald's Co-op of the greater Cincinnati area, you can put just McDonald's, and if it says ISCI code 83-1214, it can put $1.99 Big Mac. So you can control what's on the screen. But even more importantly than that is if you're playing a song, in the middle of the song, we have an opportunity for you to put a separate message up on the screen. The music continues, but the line, the message displays. It's just a much, we'd love to show it to people, but it really gives you a much more dynamic control of what your radio station looks like on the dashboard.
I remember one thing that Joe helped explain to us was, me and my business partner, Larry Fuss, we've been fighting this for years. Different car radios display the data that you put on your RDS differently.
Absolutely.
And it's a little frustrating to try to get it right, at least for the majority of cars. You guys have really delved into this, and I don't know if it's possible to solve, but you guys have a pretty good solution.
Well, it's a problem we as broadcasters created because the RDS technology has been there for 20 years, 25 years. RDS technology has been around for a long time. And broadcasters did not do anything to put content on the dashboard. And so the automotive industry was actually fairly enthused about this when it first came out. And then the radio industry did not embrace it as much. And they went on to other things. And their display technology, they didn't put a lot of energy and emphasis on it. I tell the story that when I was at NAB, a group of us were in Detroit, and we were visiting with the 11 senior people from the dash team at General Motors. These are the people that decided what goes in the dashboard.
Okay.
And we're presenting them what the radio tuner of the future could look like. Store forward, on-demand programming, things of that nature. The guy leans back in his chair, knew him well. He said, "Steve, I like you guys. Always enjoy meeting with you. You're great to work with. But how can we have any confidence you can deliver on that when you guys can't even get RDS right?" And he said, "Your RDS displays are really pretty pitiful." And he said, "You got to take care of that before we can have confidence about things in the future." And Kirk, you couldn't have poured a bucket of ice in my lap anymore. He was exactly right.
Yeah.
And so that's why I'm as passionate as I am about helping broadcasters get that technology cleaned up. And if we do the job we should, and the fact that backup cameras have now come to vehicles and the theater that's in the dashboard is much different than what it used to be, we can have a much better experience. But we got to put some stuff in it too, not just expect them to solve our problem.
Yeah, nowadays we no longer have to deal with just a little 8-character display. We typically have a screen. Yeah.
Right, full color.
Yeah.
So there are lots of things you can do with that.
And I take it that your tech also is works in the HD radio world.
It works RDS, HD. It works on the auto stage technology that Xperia is introducing. So all three levels, just because of the physics, and it can't work on an AM station, but on FM with RDS, on HD with that enhanced service, and on the auto stage with some incredible things they're doing, we work on all of those and help stations manage that content and make money. That's probably the biggest thing. We're really giving people a way to make money.
I'd like to understand better that auto stage. Maybe you can give me some ideas of who to talk to or how to get a demo of that.
Absolutely. They'd be great guests for you on your show.
Now, you said you're CEO of Q, and that has a different spelling than one might expect.
Q-U-U.
Okay.
People always wonder, why? Is it Q-U-U? No, it's just Q. And the way that came about, it was the founder of the company, Joe Harb, took the idea of putting things in line. So a Q, the French word for Q, Q-U-E-U-E, and like tech companies do to be really cool, they just drop the two E's. Yeah. Yeah. So it's Q-U-U. I didn't come up with the name, but it serves us well.
Tiny bit of trivia, maybe you could use one day. The word queuing has five consecutive vowels, and I think it's the only English word that does.
I'll use that on my Wordle tomorrow.
Q-U-E-U-E-I-N-G. That's a lot of vowels. I'd like to buy a vowel, please. Oh, there's 27 vowels.
Well, you know, you got to be our generation to know what Q-burn means.
Oh, yes, yes.
You know, exactly. And why the first 8 seconds of every record at the radio station sounded roundy and scratchy.
We never spelled it the right way. We just spelled it C-U-E.
C-U-E.
Yeah.
All right. Right.
Steve, thanks so much for talking to us. Appreciate it.
And I want to say thank you for this, for what you do at TWRC, because it's a great information for the industry. It's a great way to bring new ideas to the forefront of the industry. You're a lot of fun. I really appreciate what you do. But thank you for this show and giving us the opportunity to talk to you.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, pal.
Steve Newberry, CEO of QQUU. Hey, we're going to take this quick break. We've got a couple of messages for you. We got a message from Broadcast Bionics, and we'll be right back.
Welcome to the Bionic Studio. The Bionic Studio brings all audience interaction to the fingertips of a production team in radio, TV, and podcast. Our workflow-led system is working 24/7 around the world for small broadcasters and national and international networks. Our telephony module, Bionic Talk Show, allows cost-effective centralization, remote operation, scalability, and resilience across an entire network of stations, but at the same time is used in single-studio self-op environments. Social media curation and activity is now considered a broadcast-critical part of programming. Bionic Social means the studio isn't overwhelmed with a wall of interaction from an ever-growing number of social platforms. We combine SMS, MMS, and email together with a speech-to-text service for listeners using smart speakers. We enable studio teams to curate, filter, and display all platforms in one place, and post text, images, and video content to multiple platforms in one operation. Effortless collection of video content with Bionic Director has helped position some of the world's most successful stations as leaders in viral content, generating appointments to listen and free marketing via retweets and shares. Bionic Contest enables end-to-end tracking of on-air competitions, live reads, and prizes. These could be on-air contests, automated SMS entry, or online. Anywhere, and Skype TX for Radio brings high-quality audio and video contribution into the studio with ease. No need for dedicated PCs to run different applications. Everything is controlled within the Bionic Studio UI, and incoming connections are visible to users along with all other platforms. Our codec integration enables connection, algorithm configuration, and directory to a wide range of IP and ISDN codecs. The Bionic Studio, a unique suite of products designed to enable your talent to work smarter.
Thanks so much to Broadcast Bionics and the Bionic Studio. You can learn more at bionics.co.uk or my favorite URL, which would be bionic.radio. Thanks a lot, Broadcast Bionics, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack. We are live at the JW Marriott Hotel and Convention Center in Austin, Texas. We're at the Texas Association of Broadcasters. I guess you can't see that. It's the annual convention and trade show. All right. Good deal. I have with me. Hey, good to see you. I'm glad you put a shirt on.
Good to be here. Thank you. Thank you.
Doug Watson.
I wish I had your hair.
Here, come a little closer in here. Yes, close. Okay, there we go. You're with LinkUp Communications.
LinkUp Communications. We are based in Panama City. We do commercial satellite. Radio, TV,
right.
We can provide everything.
And one thing that we were talking about is there are a few stations who failed to get their dishes registered, thinking, why would I need to do that?
Right.
And some of them are suffering a consequence.
Running into issues now with the whole 5G filter thing. They're running into issues where they're going to have to pay to either put the filter on or replace the antenna or repoint to another satellite. Or, as you know, I mean, things have been shuffling around like crazy. So if you didn't register your dish, you're kind of on your own.
We had you on. We've had Mark Johnson on. We've had another gentleman on to talk about the registration process and then the filter process and the two-stage, the different color filters and all that kind of stuff. Where does all that stand now?
We are past the first deadline where the top 46 markets had to be done. Okay. And that was December the 5th of last year. Okay. We're in a two-year period now where our next deadline is December 5th of 2023. So everything needs to be done by then. Most of the video carriers had a red filter put on them. So the red filter blocked out up to below 3,800. Okay. The blue filter blocks
3,800 megahertz.
Correct. Okay. The blue filter filters out everything below 40 megahertz, 4 gig.
Okay.
So what's happening right now in this transition time is the smaller markets are being filtered. But you're going to have a time probably next year. There are new satellites being launched. You're going to have a time next year where there's going to be a flurry of activity getting those red filters changed out to blue filters. So if you've got a radio station, you haven't put a filter on yet, and you're thinking about waiting because, I mean, you've got another year and a half. There's no real hurry. It's going to get busy next year, and you may be a shortage of filters, maybe a shortage of technicians to put in. I mean, you can put the filter in. What we provide is a proof of performance before the filter goes in,
yeah.
Proof of the performance after the filter goes in, so that if an issue ever comes up, you can show them, look, we put the filter in, and this is what it looked like when we put the filter in. So,
and just to remind folks, and you tell me if I've got any of this wrong, the reason we're having to do this is because the FCC sold off part of our C-band spectrum that was used for satellite downlinking, and they sold it off to the cell carriers because it's real valuable real estate for them in certain modes, right?
Correct. It's essentially the 5G network. Now they have a ground-based 5G network that's in the 600 megahertz range,
right.
And Verizon, T-Mobile's been using that for a while.
Right.
But this additional frequency is going to give them more coverage, they think.
Yeah. and because the ground-based cell towers. Mm-hmm. Can be close to your C-band.
Can be close to a downlink.
Doesn't have to be in line of sight, anything
correct,
like that.
Correct.
And the power, the signal being received at your dish, even though it's off axis, is way higher than the little old thing up in the sky.
Correct, correct. And the LNB is going to amplify that entire C-band and cram it into your receiver.
Oh, yeah.
What the filter does is it filters out the parts that they took.
Right. Okay. So now, when we talked about this before, I'm not saying it was all theory, but we were saying, here's what is going to happen to the spectrum. It's going to look like this. And if you let your LNB amplify this, it's going to way overload.
It's
going to cause some problems for you. And now you have actual experience.
Correct. I was just in Houston last week and on a spectrum analyzer, you can see the 5G carriers popping up, and that's just like cell phone. You know what a cell phone looks like on a spectrum analyzer. They pop up and down, they frequency hop. It's a mess. And it's ugly and it's huge next to what's coming down from the satellites. So we can actually see it. Another thing that we're seeing is that some of the carriers are getting what's kind of like an STA, and they're firing up in markets that they shouldn't be firing up in. And so we're starting to see some of that in some smaller markets where all of a sudden people are getting 5G interference and they don't know why. And you go look at it with a spectrum analyzer and you can see why the carriers are, because, you know, nobody's ever turned on a transmitter that wasn't licensed.
The interference that you get now, I don't know if you're experienced mostly with video downlink or audio downlink, but if I'm a radio station and I've got an XDS receiver and I start getting interfered with, what's that going to manifest itself like?
You're going to have pops, clicks, cutting out. It's look like you got low signal. I mean, you've got, you know what it's, if you've got a double carrier, it's going to knock you out.
Yeah.
And that's essentially what's happening. So you're going to have, you know, you're going to have less signal. You're going to have pops, clicks, dropouts, audio dropouts, things like that.
Well, when you and I met at your booth and you said, look, Kirk, what we told you was going to happen.
It's happening.
Is happening.
It's happening. Yeah, it's exactly. It's happening.
But the filter design is kind of amazing that it really knocks that down.
It is incredible. You can look at our website, linkupcommunications.com. I think we've got some pictures on there before and after filters, and you can see where they've notched out everything above 4,200 megahertz, everything below 40 megahertz.
Okay.
It's our 4,000. It's 4 gig. 4.2 gig.
So is, these filters, would you describe them as a combination of notch and bandpass, or how would you
it's,
describe
I think it's a bandpass filter. Okay. It just passes the 4 to 4.2 gig frequencies. Yeah.
And is there a kind of for radio broadcasters, it seems like there's been kind of a minimum dish size for a while now. What's kind of the physically?
Yeah, you know, with everybody moving around, them coming up with different compression schemes, things yeah. like that, anything below a 3.7 is probably not going to work anymore. Yeah. You got a 3 meter dish, it's going to be questionable. If you're doing video, it won't work at all. Gotcha. The old mesh dishes, we've run into a few of those that just don't, they won't do anything. They won't receive enough signal. The minimum we put in is 3.7, 3.8, but we put in some 4.2s, 4.5s, things like that as well. So,
and you mentioned that you know, broadcasters who went in for the what'd you call it, the plan where you got money from
the buyout. Yeah, the FCC. Last minute, the FCC offered a buyout. If you'll buy out and not require us to put your filter in or make good, we'll give you, I think it was $8,900, an antenna, I've talked to several people that there's a clearinghouse that you have to go through to get that money.
Yeah.
And I've talked to other people
who are applying for government money go through the same clearinghouse.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Like, I mean, if, I don't know, if you're a rutabaga farmer, it's got this form apparently has drop downs for all kinds of things. And I'm told that for a broadcaster, you're not going to be able to fill this form out.
Yes. It's extremely prohibitive. They do everything they can to keep that money, and I've talked to several people that have just beaten their heads against the wall. You got to set up a separate account it can be deposited to. You got to jump through all these hoops to do things, and it's just the pictures. They're asking for pictures. If you have a dual feed feed horn, yeah. you got horizontal vertical polarity. That's considered two antennas. So you get two payouts for that.
Okay.
They're wanting to make sure that you've got pictures and those are actually hooked up. They're LNBs on those ports. Yeah. You can't just have a two-port feed with one LNB on it. You got to have LNBs on both four ports. Yeah, they got to be hooked up to something. So we had a couple of customers that we've gone and put filters on that have called me and said, "Hey, you did take pictures of all that stuff, right?" I was like, "Yeah." So can you send me this picture of this dual feed? And so we'll send it to them. Because they're asking for it, they're coming back and checking.
I think now I didn't take care of it, but for my radio stations, we hired an outside consulting firm that fills out these government forms.
Right. I can't imagine somebody other than like an FCC attorney, you know. Apparently they're quite complex. Yeah. I've talked to a couple of folks that have said, I'm sure a lot of people just have given up, which is terrible. But
wow. What's your business? Rutabagas, mountain oysters, or satellite dish? All right. Well, Doug, it's great talking to you. Thank you for stopping by.
Thank you very much.
What do you anticipate here at this show tomorrow? What are people asking about?
This is the first time I've ever been to the TAB. So we've got a booth, 506. Come by and see us. Okay. Let's talk satellites.
I'll see you tomorrow.
Cool.
Okay, man. Take care. Thanks a lot. That's Doug Watson with LinkUp Communication. That's Mark Johnson's company. His son, Clay Johnson, is also here. And let's see. Let's break. Are you okay? You sure? Okay. Here I am trying to wrangle somebody. Hey, Richard, good to see you. Richard Gerlovich.
Hi, everybody.
Am I saying your name right?
You are.
Okay, good. You are with Cox Media Group in
Houston and San Antonio.
Here, let's get both of us over a little bit. Okay. Centered up better. Okay. Yeah, Houston and San Antonio, both.
Right.
You take care of both markets. Uh-huh. Okay. Wow. Are you the chief engineer for those markets?
Yes.
Or director of engineering?
Yeah, director of engineering for both.
What's been on your radar these days? What's taken up your time or your interest or your passion?
We're modernizing everything. So trying to get everything up to solid state, combining our importers, exporters, just modernizing and working on our processing and modernizing that as well.
You still have some tube transmitters?
I do.
Yeah? Tell me about what you got.
Oh, I've got a combined 60. And it's something.
What a monster! So the out of the combiner, it puts out 60 kilowatts or close.
It puts out 50.
Okay,
but
that's what the antenna wants.
Antenna wants a 50. So I don't mind the tubes that much, but it's getting hard to find parts and
yeah. And how old are those transmitters? Or can you tell me what they are?
They're the Harris transmitters, and they're not. I say they're not old, but you know they're probably about 25 years old, maybe 20.
They've been fully depreciated by the accounting department.
Right.
And now these days, do you replace it with something else of that much power, or what do you do to get that much power if you had to replace it?
In some cases, yeah, but more efficient antenna designs and tricks like that really work pretty well.
Is that station doing HD at the moment?
It is. It is separately, but yes.
So it's a separate transmitter and
separate HD transmitter.
Okay. And what high level combining or space combining?
A separate antenna.
Okay, that's space combining. Mm-hmm. I think that's what they call that. Wow. And so you making things all digital wherever you can.
We're mostly there already, but just cleaning up the tie off points and tying up loose ends with that digital, but mostly just modernizing.
Now, are you guys using any of these unlicensed IP radio links or licensed radio links? The 5.8, 6 gig, 11 gig, that kind of thing?
Yeah, licensed 6 gig links between our tower sites and the studio.
How do you get, because a lot of engineers are unfamiliar with the process, how do you go about analyzing a path and then getting it licensed and getting a frequency chosen for that?
Well, that was done before I got there.
Oh, okay.
So bad intel for me. So
I mean, a company as big as Cox Media Group, you probably have an office that
we do
can handle it.
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm looking for practical information at some point of, how does a smaller broadcaster like me, right now I'm running some unlicensed links, but we're mostly in rural areas. But if you're in a metropolitan area, you kind of don't want to take a chance on an unlicensed link. You want to have a frequency that's yours.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. And it's fantastic. It works great. I can get it's just like another office down the hall.
Now, tell me about your upgrading with the importers and exporters. What kind of things? Because, the original gear, Gen 1, Gen 2 stuff is pretty old. Why are you, why would you be upgrading importers and exporters?
Well, they make them in a single rack unit device now, and it's all solid state, no spinning hard drives, nothing, very small footprint, all enclosed importer, exporter in one box. So it just simplifies it, dumbs it way down, and it's should be more reliable in that way.
Are you guys, in terms of work workflow, is your talent and people in the studio, are they kind of considering themselves working in a post-COVID world now, or are they still, anybody working from home still? How's that going?
Well, there's always a new variant that comes out, and people, there's a lot of precautions in place, but most people are in the office again. But we do have a lot more hybrid workers than we had before. And we do use a lot less space now that we have fewer people coming in. But it's mostly back to normal. Just we're more careful if someone shows symptoms or.
They're quickly shunned, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And
leper.
Right. Yeah. Hey, it's ugly, but it has to be.
Here's a codec. Go home.
Yeah, right. And that's what we do. We set them up at home. We have we call them footballs. So they're kits with a codec and everything in them. We can hand that to them, and they can broadcast from home just as easily.
Well, anything else on your radar these days you want to tell us about or instruct us? Maybe you've just found out something that, oh my gosh, I've done engineering for years and just found this out.
Man, that's
anything come to mind?
Me on the spot. No,
I know, it's my job.
I'll think of something in 5 minutes.
Oh, sure. Well, you can circle back around if you want to, too. Anything else? So if you were to hire a new engineer to come to the Houston market, because you're right there, you're not far from the ocean, right?
Right.
Or the Gulf, right? Right. What might a new engineer think was unusual about the Houston market? I think it's huge. It takes forever to drive across it. But what's an engineer's surprise when they come to work with you?
Well, that's a funny point. because my tower sites are about 3 hours apart. They span about 3 hours. So that would be a pretty big surprise. I may leave that off the job description or off the ad. But if they're not from a coastal market, they may be unfamiliar with how quickly the weather can change and of course, how slowly we watch hurricanes come in.
Yeah.
And the preparation that goes in before a hurricane hits. So
if it can be 3 hours from one transmitter site to another, you must have some long STL shots.
I do. They're about 30 and 35 miles. Wow. Yeah. Very far.
Do you have to do anything really special to make sure they work other than big dishes?
Big dishes. That's it. Big dishes. And yeah, you really have to have a height.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Take care of earth curvature and Fresnel zone clearance.
Fresnel zone has to be clear. So you have to be in a high rise, and the tower has to have dishes pretty high up.
Yeah.
Do you have any double hops?
I have. Yes, I do. Actually, I do have some double hops, and I have some redundant or backup hops that are redundant or that are double hops.
I don't mean to do a commercial here, but it's okay because it's my employer. I got recently involved with a situation in Memphis, Tennessee, where a community station has a double hop STL, but their gear was getting old and they were losing their hop point because the bank that they were on, either for free or low cost, was going to remodel their roof. And so we went to an IP-based MPX thing, something from Omnia, the MPX node. And it's been wonderful. I said, you guys got to get on the same ISP at the studio and the transmitter site. So there's a minimum of, hopping around. It doesn't, the packets don't leave the market, right? They stay in the market, and it's working great for them. So that's an option I would just point out for some people.
It sounds interesting. I'd like to check it out.
I got it.
All right.
Richard, thank you so much for your help. Director of Engineering, Cox Media Group in Houston and San Antonio.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot. Okay. Talk to you later. All right. Hey, it's This Week in Radio Tech. Our show is brought to you in part by Broadcasters General Store and our friends at Innovonics. We'll be right back after this.
Hi, this is Gary Lerman. I'm Sales and Marketing Manager from Innovonics. I'm joined here by our President and CEO, Ben Barber. And we're here to tell you about two new products that we're very excited about. They're HD modulation monitors, the model 551 and 552. And Ben's going to take us through some of the features. Ben, what can you tell us about these?
The 551 has the big display, 7-inch touchscreen display. You can look at different parameters instantly by walking up to it and touching it, getting information that you need. It also has the LED displays for FM total modulation, left, right, FM, HD 1, 2, 3, and 4. The other thing that the 551 has is that it has full-time audio outputs on studio hub connectors on the back, both analog as well as AES digital. So you've got FM, HD 1 through 4 there full-time. The 552 doesn't have the display, doesn't have the metering, and doesn't have the full-time audio outputs, but the web interfaces are identical for remote viewing and monitoring.
Great. Thanks very much, Ben. These products are going to be available in January 2022. Contact us at InnovonicsBroadcast.com for more information. Thanks very much.
Thanks to Innovonics and Broadcasters General Store. That's where you can get Innovonics. If you go to bgs.cc, that's their website, bgs.cc, or call them. Broadcaster General Store, their whole business really is set up on a personal one-to-one relationship. You give them a call, you tell them what you're interested in, you ask for their advice, or what I always ask them, hey, here's the product I want, but if it's got a big delay, maybe you can send me something else. And so that's how I have a bunch of weird equipment in my station. No.
That's how it happens.
Call them at 352-622-7700. Thanks to Broadcasters General Store and Innovonics for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right, he's back, ladies and gentlemen. Jeff Welton.
Hey, good to be back.
You are you're on stage tomorrow.
I'm like a trained monkey. They put a mic in front of me, and I just perform on command. It's kind of cool.
Grounding and lightning protection. Here we are in August. Aren't we a bit late to start talking about that?
So you'd like to think so, but no. And depending on where you are, I mean, if you're down in Florida, lightning happens straight up till October, November, and then you get that 3 month, or they call it rainy season, and then I haven't figured it out yet. And I mean, in my part of the world, of course, we get two storms a year, so that's just not an issue. But it's one of those things that this is the time to be talking about lightning protection, yeah. So you can fix it before March when the storms do start coming back.
You know, on the whole topic of lightning, but we know how much damage lightning can do. We've probably all suffered from it. Years ago, back when computer networking was kind of new, I had just put a computer network into our stations in Cleveland, Mississippi. We had a 100-foot STL tower mm-hmm. in the back of the building. Yeah. And I don't know that anything was properly grounded. Totally my fault. Lightning hit, and all the computer network cards and the switches were burned up to toast.
Well, and you learn this stuff after it blows up.
Yeah.
You know, that's how we learn everything. It's like, oh, it's running. Everything's good. And now it's not running. Why? And, you know, so that's, I give you an example on the computer side, and I'll be in Nebraska next week. But I was talking to a guy there a few years ago at their state show, and he works at a data center. He's not even in broadcasting. Nope. He just happened to be there and heard that we were talking about grounding and stuff, and he kind of sat in. And they'd been having a lot of problems. He was talking like $45,000, $50,000 worth of damage every storm. I mean, we're not talking per year. We're talking per storm. This is not insignificant.
With a data center.
Yeah, so blown up switches. Well, I don't know what's in a data center. I got out of customer service when you started talking networking so much. But anyway, so a lot of stuff is failing. And so we got talking about grounding and just bonding and single point and all that great stuff. And he said, I'm going to try some of this stuff. So we swapped a few emails over the next few months. I ran into him about 2 years later. He sent me a follow-up, and he goes, yeah. He goes, so now we're down to, we lose about $3,000 worth of stuff a year.
Oh, my goodness.
That's the difference.
Yeah, save them $250,000 a year.
Easy. Yeah. And I mean, that's, like I say, it's one of those you don't think about it until stuff starts to fail.
So the way you correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know what you're going to say tomorrow starting at 8 o'clock in the morning. I'll try to wake up. With lightning and protection and grounding, first of all, we're trying to maybe even persuade the lightning not to hit our tower or our power lines.
Sort of.
Well, some people sell stuff to make your tower not get hit.
So I'll quantify that groan a little bit. Now, there's some point discharge stuff, intentional corona, like the static cats those things work.
Yeah.
Now, they're not going to stop you from getting hit. They'll help the tower become a slightly less attractive target. Right. They do a great job at stopping like wind-driven static and on your AM, the stuff that makes the guy wire insulators arc, makes your transmitter go pop, pop, pop.
Right.
They'll do an excellent job on helping that.
Okay.
But about the best thing we can do, and the way I put it is we're playing voltage divider theory here. Okay, so we are quite literally, lightning is going to hit the tower at some point. It's going to go down the tower, and then it's got two choices, ground and the coax.
Well, those are my next points, actually. We're going to try to make the tower less attractive.
Right.
Then when the tower does get hit by lightning, as it will.
It will.
We're going to try to make sure that lightning, it's the easiest thing you can do is go to the ground.
Right. And now I'm going to quantify this a bit and make you think even harder.
Okay.
So it's a three-step process. So the grounding is important. But now let's say that I shoot 10,000 amps, which is a really small lightning strike, but 10,000 amps down this tower. Now Earth has a resistance. So say it's 2-3 ohms per foot, which is not uncommon for this part of the world. So 2-3 ohms per foot, which is why you don't stand with your feet apart in a lightning storm, because now you run 10,000 amps across the 2 feet between your feet, and you develop several thousand volts from left foot to right.
Is this why flamingos never get hurt by lightning? Because they're on 1 foot?
That's a billion-dollar question. You know, I never thought about that. I'll have to, next time I'm in Florida, I'll ask a flamingo. But so back to the topic. So all this potential comes down, and now ground, which has a finite resistance, unless you've got it all really well bonded together with copper and ground rods, has got a potential from over here to over there.
Right.
All right. So now this potential relative to the rest of the planet is spiked significantly higher.
Right.
So now ground is not ground at that point.
Yeah.
At that point, we need to be able to dissipate to all the rest of the world. And the fastest way to do that is over the millions of miles of cable and grounds that the power company provides. So surge protector is just as critical as the grounding. And if you don't have the two, then you don't have the complete package. Now, of course, and I'll go a step further, and because I wouldn't be me otherwise, you don't got to have, but it's useful to have ferrites. Because, like I said, grounding is a matter of degree. We're playing the voltage divider game.
We're not talking the little weasels either.
No, not ferrets. Ferrites. Yeah.
These are rings of an iron compound.
It's some sort of ferrous material, usually iron, or the various materials, depending. There's tons of different options. Okay. And then some carbon powder and an epoxy to bond it all together. Yeah. And so the ferrites on their own don't do a whole lot. But they can give you maybe an ohm or two of more impedance on that device relative to that path, which is where you want the lightning to grow. And when we're playing this matter of degree, the voltage divider game, everything that makes my gear look less attractive mm-hmm. is a good thing. Mm-hmm. Now, again, ferrites on their own, not going to do anything. You need the grounding. It's got to be single point, well bonded. Mm-hmm. You need the surge protector, MOV, silicon avalanche dye. I don't care. But some sort of decent quality surge protector between the ground and the AC lines. And then you need the ferrites and just a few other practices to kind of raise the effective impedance of your gear. And at that point, you should be a lot better off.
Real quick, we got a minute. Tell us about building design and at least helping to mitigate lightning with reasonable building design.
So one of the biggest schools out there is the Motorola R56 code, and you can download that. You can Google R56 Motorola, and you'll find the PDF of it, several sources. That is probably the gold standard for building grounding. Now, there's a caveat. They talk a lot about halo grounding, and like if you buy a lot of the old cell sites, you'll see the halo grounds. And halo grounds on their own are not a bad thing, except that you've got a ring around the roof. Okay, I'm just making sure that my hand is on the camera so I can talk with my hands. Yeah, the ring around the roof. But then you've got a bunch of a cable in each corner coming down, and usually they go outside and sometimes to ground rods. And if those are not all bonded, then we lost our single point grounding. So we have to pay a lot more attention with a halo ground because you can get into a lot of trouble with it. But having said that, properly done, a halo ground is a wonderful thing. Improperly done, it's just a dog's breakfast, so I don't know where the current's going. And that's what we're trying to do. Again, we're playing the voltage divider game. We try to, we can't control the lightning, we can't stop the lightning, but we can, with physics, have some impact on where it's going to go based on what the lowest impedance path is. You're never going to get to zero, but if we can get it to 0.5%, then for most lightning storms, that means we're not going to blow up a lot of gear.
My best introduction to transmitter site grounding, tower grounding, and the right way to do things, or how to improve a bad situation, mm-hmm. was from a document that came along with a Nautel transmitter that I bought many years ago.
That document still exists on our website. It's on its third, fourth iteration now. I think I did all the graphics for it around 1990-something, 99. Mm. But yeah, you can go to our website, Nautel.com, up top on the, over to the side, there's a technical support, I think support tab. You click on that and there's a resources tab and white papers. Somewhere you're going to find white resources and white papers, and it's very near the bottom of the list. But yeah, lightning protection for radio transmitter stations.
Yeah, you probably do a Google or your favorite search engine search with some of those terms and you'll find it.
DuckDuckGo, Google, Bing, whatever. Yeah, I mean, that's...
I'll tell you what, I'll put a link to it in the show notes.
There you go. That'd be really cool. Yeah, absolutely. So, and I mean, the big thing, and this is probably like lightning protection is cool. I want to beat another drum for a second. If Chris Tyre's listening, he'll be there. Yay! Education. This is all about education. We need to be doing more. And I mean, I kind of got, somebody asked me to go to an SBE education committee meeting in January, and I haven't stopped attending. I'm not sure whether I really was supposed to just one and done, but... I kind of made, anyway, so that's something that we need to be beating the drum more on, too. So that's, I think that'd be kind of cool. You and Chris need to have a mentorship talk where he chairs the mentorship committee, too. So anyway, right. There you go, show topics.
We learned a lot here in a few minutes.
I tell you what, I learned something every time I talk to you.
All right, Jeff. Listen, it's great to talk to you. Thank you very, very much.
Yeah, we'll be seeing you around soon.
8 o'clock tomorrow morning here. What?
8 o'clock. 8 o'clock is, they just don't know me that well. That's okay. I'm still on Atlantic time in my head, so I'll have time to have 3 or 4 coffee and run around the lake before I go over.
Okay. Yeah. Well, when am I going to see you next?
You going to be in Nebraska?
No, I won't
are
be in Nebraska.
Going to be Let's see. In Alabama?
Alabama. Yes.
I'll see you in Alabama next week.
And that's next week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. All right, man. Take care, Jeff. Jeff Welton with Nautel. You know him and you love him. Hey, we're going to be right back in a minute with Paul Kriegler, my colleague in the TELUS Alliance. This week in radio. Oh, hello.
Talking about processing.
No, it's time for a little commercial break to, you know, help pay for the show. And our show is brought to you in part. In fact, this is a live spot. So I got to do a live spot. You can help me out if you want. Cool. We're going to do a live commercial for Angry Audio, maker of the amazing Bluetooth gadget. And right about now is when the picture of the Bluetooth gadget pops up magically on there it is, the Bluetooth audio gadget. There are plenty of ways that you could hook a smartphone into your console, but there's one really easy way to do it that sounds good, and that's to use the Bluetooth audio gadget. It pairs easily with your cell phone and other employees' cell phones as needed. And it's got a little pairing button on it. And the cool thing about the Bluetooth audio gadget is that it knows if you want to have a two-way conversation with somebody and put that onto your audio console, or if you're just trying to play some high-quality audio off of the phone and have it go one way from the phone into the console. So let's say that you've got some music on your phone and you want to play it back with as high possible quality as you can. Well, you will get that automatically because of the standards that are built into Bluetooth that the Bluetooth audio gadget from Angry Audio adheres to.
You know what I'm sold on? Look at that box. Just look at the box.
Oh, it's heavy duty.
Yeah, look at the font. Just look at the design. That looks cool. You want that in your rack.
It is. And this is great for home studios. You want to put a caller on the air or play something that's on your phone at your home studio, because this Bluetooth audio gadget, it has analog and AES/EBU audio coming out the back, and you hook this to your audio console. And it doesn't matter what your console is. It could be, you know, one of those Rodecaster Pros. Mm-hmm. It could be something from Mackie. It could be Axia. An expensive. It could be an Axia console, and you're going to get great audio quality in and out of it with balanced XLR audio. There's no better way to put callers on the air or to play audio out of your phone than with a Bluetooth audio gadget. So check that out from Angry Audio. The website is angryaudio.com, and they have lots of cool stuff there too, including
the Chameleon too, from our friend Cornelius.
They do, and the headphone disconnector.
Oh, I saw that they were demonstrating that when I was on the road a few weeks ago.
I just had to fix a headphone amp recently because there was a 1/4-inch plug broken off
because some stupid DJ rolled his chair back and messed up.
You got it. Well, the headphone disconnector, there it is. Fixes all that from angryaudio.com. Hey, our show is also brought to you by Max Connect Wireless. Josh Bone, it was his birthday a day or two ago. Happy birthday, Josh.
Happy birthday.
But Josh did a great thing for our industry in getting the cell carriers to sell us high priority packetized data with the Max Connect Wireless boxes. And here's someone to tell you about it right now.
I'm Gary Morrill, Midwest Regional Director of Engineering for Alpha Media. When I first spoke with Josh Bone about Max Connect, he told me they'd work great for remote transmitter sites where connectivity was a challenge. And you know, he's absolutely right. We even have sites where we're using this as a backup to our STL using Max Connect's dual carrier option, and it works perfectly. We also have times where we need to be able to get out to a venue where it's kind of challenging because everybody and his brother is trying to stream video at the same time, like at a big sporting event. And you know what? Our data gets through every time because it's prioritized packet data. It works for us. It'll work for you. Max Connect. Check it out.
Thanks, Gary Morrill. And we've got one of those here with us today, a Max Connect wireless box. And no matter which carrier that you want to deal with, whichever one you think gives you the best coverage in your area, AT&T, T-Mobile, Verizon, Sprint, which is now part of T-Mobile, they can get you hooked up with any one of those. And with Max Connect, it's not so much the 4G LTE modem that is the secret. It's the SIM card that goes inside that Max Connect Wireless has arranged for you for prioritized data and a fixed IP address. Hey, we're back. We're live at the JW Marriott Hotel and Convention Center in downtown Austin. What's this river out here, Paul?
That's the Colorado River. This is actually people that have lived in Austin, Texas for a long time call this Town Lake. It's now called Lake Lady Bird. They changed the name of it. But if you're somebody that's been around Austin for a while, you're always going to call it Town Lake. Okay. But it's beautiful down here, though.
Well, we are. The camera's pointing the wrong direction. It's pointing inside, but it's bright out there, so it kind of had to go this way. Paul Kriegler is with us for our last little segment here, and he will have our tip of the week for us. Paul's a colleague of mine. Hey, he's worked a lot of places. Maybe he's been a colleague of yours. And Paul, you handle audio. What started your fascination with audio processing?
Well, that's a great question, because I grew up in Omaha as a pirate radio broadcaster when I was like 12 or 13 years old.
Putting, say it isn't so.
Yeah, my dad helped me build my first FM transmitter, and I always wondered why my puny 10-watt pirate station didn't sound as big as the other stations in Omaha growing up. Even though I was right next to the transmitter, I thought at the time that, you know, it should be just as loud, but of course, as you know, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But that's how I got into processing. And okay. It was just that interest in and how these things work behind the scenes. And now here I am handling AM, FM, stream processing, HD processing for the TELUS Alliance. And I'm based here in Austin, Texas. I'm lucky and I get to call Austin home. I was in Cleveland just a couple weeks ago, though. But if you're at any station here in the U.S. and you're looking for a demo of a hardware audio processing demo, maybe you want to try Omnia 9S Enterprise, reach out to me. You can email me, and I can get you, take care of you.
I'm going to ask you a question or two, but we should mention what that is. Omnia 9S Enterprise, that's not a box that screws into a rack, is it?
No, we've virtualized the Omnia 9. You can use it in a Windows environment. We're working on being able to deploy Omnia 9 processing as a Docker container for folks that are looking to do even more virtualization of their air chains. But that's, you know, we're still working on audio processing boxes. We've got a long legacy of making awesome hardware. We're going to continue making hardware, but we're also doing a lot of software work, which is really exciting to see and hear.
Now, I want, you know, for years I've been talking on this show and in seminars and stuff about audio processing for your stream. And we know that streams are becoming more and more and more important to broadcasters. Hey, we're just across the way here from Nielsen. They've got a booth over here. And many radio stations have their streams showing up in their Nielsen ratings, right? So streams, that's your transmitter for the internet. Well, I used to complain that I heard a lot of bad streams if I tuned around. I'm not hearing, at least the things that I listen to, and maybe it's because I avoid bad streams, but I'm hearing a lot of good streams these days. Maybe your experience is different. I don't know. But I'm hearing a lot of, well, maybe I listen to my own radio stations. Maybe that's why. But I'm hearing a lot of good streams. And if people want to set their stream to sound good, listenable long-term, and yet kind of jump out of the radio or their Wi-Fi radio or their computer, what are some of the key things people, engineers, program directors, should remember or consider when they're thinking about their stream processing?
You use that term jump out, and that's one of the problems. A lot of program directors, myself included, once upon a time thought that always believed along the lines of louder is better. And in the world of streaming, you really need to contain your loudness. And we express this in LUFS, which is a measurement of loudness, exactly what it stands for.
Loudness units full scale.
Yeah. Full scale, thank you.
It's funny, some people say LUFS, but LUFS, the U does stand for units, not units.
That's why I say LUFS.
LUFS, yeah.
But around between minus 15 and minus 13, and that's important. You really don't want to be too loud feeding a streaming encoder, because that works against you. Counterintuitively, the louder you feed a streaming encoder, the more you introduce the metallic artifacts that sound like your stream is coming from underwater or just sounds subpar compared to other stations.
And you know, when I said jumps out of your Wi-Fi radio or whatever, I knew that what I said would be understood differently than what I meant. And what I meant was not jump out like loudness, but jump out with quality.
Right.
I have pride of ownership. I'm proud of the way my stations sound streaming, but they sound dynamic, and I can listen to them for hours without getting fatigued. They don't get on my nerves.
We've got something new coming very soon from the TELUS Alliance, and particularly Omnia. one of my favorite audio processors for HD and for streaming. It's not available for streaming. It's the Omni 11. If you listen to the HD section of an Omni 11, I think it stands above the rest of the pack in terms of audio processing. It has something in it called Sensus. And what that does is it, for lack of a better term, if Courtney was here, he could explain it, but it massages the highs. And that same Sensus codec is coming very soon to the ZipStream X2 platform. Ooh, and it'll be available for everybody that wants to use our software to stream with. And so we're going to take streaming, you know, streaming is about to get even better sounding across the whole world here very soon.
All right. Well, I'll watch that because that's what I use at my stations is the ZipStream X2 software.
Yeah, Sensus is going to be available in a brand new audio processor that's coming for the X2. Okay. And you're going to be hearing more about it here within about the next 60 days. And Sensus is going to be part of that. So I'm real excited for people to hear it.
So other than buying the latest and greatest, I'm hitting you up here for a tip of the week. So I'm an engineer or a program director. I feel like maybe I'm missing the mark, or what can I do to sound a little better? Do you have a tip for me?
Start with clean audio, Kirk.
Yeah, I was gonna say. Oh, and you already said keep it between -13 and -16 lufs. Sounds weird to me. I'm going to say lufs, but okay. Who was that lady that had the song about 99 luft balloons?
Nina, that's right, Nina.
They weren't luft balloons.
No, not luft balloons.
That's a German word, I suppose.
I guess my tip would be keep it clean. Always wave files if you can. And,
oh, yeah.
And, you know, another tip would be if you've got a newer automation system, ingest all of your audio and normalize it based on lufs as well. That's another big up. That actually helps all of your audio processing downstream.
So that's a concept I just recently came across. Normalizing an audio file used to mean finding the highest peak and adjusting the volume of the whole file so that that peak was where you wanted it. And that could, if there was one high peak in a song, it could knock everything down. Right. But there's now algorithms available to normalize based on lufs,
the entire aggregate loudness of the file,
okay,
rather than just like the highest peak and then normalizing for that.
Gotcha. So if I just found out that, for example, Playout One automation does have this option. You can normalize your ingested audio for a given lufs level.
Yeah, a lot of the automation systems are starting to include, upon ingest, the ability to set loudness normalization as opposed to just peak level normalization, which has been around for a while. Peak's been around for a while, like next gen.
It's easy math. To me, the benefit of what you just talked about is that your processing downstream now has things more in a sweet range coming out of the automation system. So instead of some things being 10 dB higher or lower than other things, and hey, I've got an Omnia 7 actually on one of my radio stations in Hawaii, and I can remote into it, and I can watch what's coming out of the automation system, and it's kind of, I wouldn't say, we'll get a spot that's too low
high. Just remember being on the radio playing CDs, and I remember playing The Police back in the day, or just some CDs. I remember every time we'd play it, we'd have to run the volume up hotter because they weren't mastered as hot. And when you ingest and you manage, you know, your loudness upon ingest, you're doing the same thing as you would if you were standing there as a board op, lifting the level to make up for the lack of loudness in the track.
Say a slow hand on the pot or getting that level on that cut right. Good advice. All right. Look to normalize based on lufs on your automation system. All right. We got to go. It's time for to say goodbye. Thank you very much, Paul, for being with us. I really appreciate you.
Welcome to Austin.
Welcome. Thank you. So what's going on today has been a number of sessions, seminars, mostly for sales and management. Tomorrow, there are some engineering seminars that are going on. I'm speaking tomorrow at 3:00 in the afternoon on Thursday. What am I talking about? Oh, yeah. I'm talking about containers, not just for shipping anymore. So we're going to talk about containers, software containers, as your part of your infrastructure. All right, we got to go. And Brian Walker was going to be with us today. And let's get Alex in here quick. Alex, come on quick. Sorry. Come on in.
Are we live on video?
We're live. Our producer has to go in a second. Okay. Alex Quintero, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Thank you.
Radio Resources.
Yes, sir.
Tell me a little bit about what you guys do.
So Radio Resources actually just launched a couple of weeks ago, and we're a one solution or one platform and multi-solution entity. Enterprise. So what we're doing is basically giving medium and small markets the opportunity to get some of the resources that the big boys get. And we won't name those big boys, but the medium and small markets, if they need programming, if they need sales, if they need help with IT, even back office stuff, we're able to help them get that resource that they need.
You know, there are quite a few bigger stations, sure, but there's quite a few small market, medium market broadcasters who've been hit by cyber attacks.
Right.
And I know this because I'm part of a group, okay. And a couple people have been hit by that. So your company, Radio Resources, can really help people protect against these kind of things.
Yeah, that is correct. And sometimes, you know, it as small markets, sometimes the engineer is also the IT guy, right? And sometimes even the remote guy and the sales, you know, so to help alleviate that pain and those pain points, we offer those IT services for radio stations.
And as a broadcast engineer myself, you know, audio and RF are my specialties. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty well versed in those. I'm a little bit versed in IT security, but you know, I feel like stations that's my size would do well to have somebody come take a look, see, and say, "Okay, we can fix these things for you, or we can show you how to fix them." But yeah, you need to fix these.
Yeah, and with Radio Resources, it starts off just like that. We do an analysis of what you may need and how we can help you, and then we move forward with creating an opportunity for the radio station and for the company or the group.
Good deal. And Alex, your background is in what?
So my background is actually in radio. I was a radio gypsy. I worked for iHeart. I worked for Cox. I worked for Cumulus when it was Susquehanna. I worked with Univision. And just recently, I got out of commercial radio. I was a content director for Miami, Puerto Rico, and New York for Univision.
Awesome.
So now I jumped into the network space, and I just want to help radio keep doing good and better. And so any way we can do that, I think Radio Resources is the answer for that.
And so, you guys have the good URL there, radioresources.com.
Yes, sir. Yep.
So your website's up and running?
It's up and running, and you're more than welcome to go and check it out.
Alex Quintero, thanks.
Yes, sir.
Thanks so much. Radio Resources offers a whole lot of services that broadcasters can use, so I encourage you to check them out. And also, we were looking for a venue, a place to do this show, and Gary James jumped right up, and he's with Radio Resources, and he said, "Hey, you can use our booth if you like." Turned out we got out here, but I want to thank them for their hospitality and willingness to accommodate. All right, we are out of time. We got to go see our friend Suncast, who's been producing the show. Thanks, Suncast, for producing today's show. Thanks also to Andrew Zarian, the founder of the GFQ Network. Next week, we're going to be live from, I believe, Birmingham, Alabama, from the Alabama Broadcasters Association show. So we'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.